Good evening, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. I'm Gloria McVeigh, your host this evening. Tonight, we'll be talking about Obamacare, officially known as the Affordable Care Act. Our guest is local health care law attorney Mark Arendt, leader of the Lehigh Valley chapter of the volunteer group Organizing for Action. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Gloria.
To save some time, I'll tell our listeners that they can find out more about Organizing for Action on facebook.com/organizingforactionLehighValleyPA or on Twitter at OFA_LV_PA. Our guests will be explaining the program itself. So if you have questions about how Obamacare works, please post your questions on WDIY's Facebook page. That's facebook.com/WDIY881. And leave your question as a comment to the post announcing tonight's program. We won't be taking questions by phone for this broadcast. Mark, tonight we're talking about Obamacare. Some of our listeners may be like me, a little worried about the prospect of finding a new health insurance plan. Others, I'm sure, would just like to know they have a basic understanding of the program, despite all the noise and smoke that's surrounding it right now. Your background made you uniquely qualified to tackle Obamacare when it came along. Briefly, what do you do as a healthcare law attorney?
Well, part of my practice is representing physician practices, healthcare facilities, nonprofit organizations in the healthcare field. In the past, I've worked with hospital networks, and I've also represented individuals who've been denied coverage by their insurance companies. So I have a broad involvement with the healthcare field.
And what is it that makes you so passionate about explaining Obamacare to those of us without law degrees?
Well, you may remember when this was being acted upon, there was quite a lot of show about how large and long the act was. And people, I think, are somewhat intimidated by that. But it is manageable, it is understandable if you break it down into its parts. And I want people to understand those parts, and I want people to recognize that there's a lot in this law that is of value to all of us.
Well, right now the politicians in Washington are arguing and pointing fingers over the problems with the rollout of healthcare.gov, the website that's the portal to Obamacare health plans. What's your take on that?
It's certainly unfortunate that there have been so many problems with the rollout of the website. But I guess there are a couple of things I'd comment on about that. Some of you may have seen reports in the news in the last few weeks about the common application for a college application process. And they were having all kinds of troubles with their new website that had a new common app for the seniors in high school who are applying to college. So I guess one of the things I'm trying to say is we have to put this in context. This is a huge new internet vehicle that's going to have some kinks in it, and it's going to need some time to work itself out. Would it have been best if it had all been worked out ahead of time? Absolutely. And it's unfortunate that that was not done. But I think they're making progress. I was on there this morning. It seemed to be working fine. So we'll see. But I think it's going to come around. The other thing I'd point out is that the website is not the only portal to access information or to apply for coverage. There are paper forms that can be obtained. There's a phone number where you can call and get support and help, and we can give all that information later on. And there are also people in the communities in which we live who are there to help people sign up and to become better acquainted with their options. So although the website is important and hopefully will be fully operational soon, there are other avenues to get to the same place.
Okay. Well, my friend who lives in Maryland says they've been able to go online to shop for health insurance since last January. Why can't we do that here in Pennsylvania?
Under the law, exchanges were to be set up in three ways. One way was for each state to set up its own exchange. The second way was for the state and the federal government to cooperate and to share responsibilities with respect to an exchange. And the third way was if neither of the two prior options were opted for by the state, that the federal government would step in and provide what was necessary to create the exchange for that state. Maryland created its own exchange, as a number of other states did. Pennsylvania did not. It chose not to do so. So it became the responsibility of the federal government to set up the site for Pennsylvania, and that became operational in part, and hopefully soon in full on October 1st.
Got it. So if I live in Pennsylvania, I go through the healthcare.gov website.
You go through www.healthcare.gov, right. And even if you live in a state that has its own plan, you can still go through www.healthcare.gov, but it will direct you to the state site.
Well, that makes sense. What happens if healthcare.gov isn't up and running until the end of November, as promised? Will I still have enough time to sign up for a plan?
Well, I'll say again what I said before, which is let's remember that the website is not the only portal to get into this information. There are other options. So people can be pursuing those other options in the meantime. But again, also, the website is working from time to time. And again, as I said, I used it this morning. So I don't think we should give up on the website completely. It may not be 100% perfect in every respect, but I think that it will be useful to many people as they evaluate their options. The other thing I would point out is a lot of people in the early stages are just shopping. They're just evaluating their options, looking at the different plans that are available, and may not be ready to make a choice until later on in the process. So it may be until November or late November, and you know, until you're actually ready to decide what you want to do. In Massachusetts, when they implemented the system, only in the first month, only 200 some people signed up. And then by the second or third month, it was still only a couple thousand. And then by the end of the process, there were thousands and thousands. So it's not necessarily a huge big deal that a lot of people haven't signed up so far. People need time to evaluate their options and to make educated choices.
Is there a deadline of some type?
Yes, there is. If you want coverage by January 1st, you will need to have done what you need to do by December 15th. So there will be a window there for people, even if, you know, this isn't what's going to happen, but even if the site were not operational at all until the end of November, there would still be a window for people to do what they need to do of 15 days, give or take. But the site is at least partially and maybe three quarters operational at this point. So I think there'll be plenty of opportunity for people to need to do what they need to do.
That sounds good. I didn't realize it was up. I didn't realize it was functioning at all right now. When I heard the end of November, I thought, okay, just forget about it for the next month.
Yeah, and I think some people heard that. And I don't think that was what was intended. I think what was intended to be said was that they really, really plan to get all the kinks out by the end of November. But I don't believe that meant, and in my own experience, that has not meant that it wasn't usable and operational now. It's just that you may still hit glitches from time to time.
Got it. And while I've been waiting to use the website, I've been hearing all of these horror stories about some people being worse off after signing up for a plan through Obamacare. I'm starting to worry about, well, what am I going to find when I do get onto the healthcare.gov website? What do you make of those stories?
Well, I think most of the stories that we've heard in the news are about people who have had their private insurance canceled, and they're really worried and afraid and concerned about what their options are going to be. And when they get that notice of cancellation, it contains another option from the same insurance company, which may in fact be more expensive and may or may not provide the coverage that they're used to. But what they really need to do is to go look for a plan. And when they go look for a plan, there will be a variety of options that offer different levels of coverage at different levels of costs, and that will vary from state to state and region to region within a state. The same plans are not offered everywhere different plans are offered in Pittsburgh than are offered in the Lehigh Valley and vice versa. So you really have to go and figure out what applies to you. It is true that there will be some people who had private insurance who may end up paying more under the new system, but they will most likely get more benefits as well. And there will be people who had private insurance that will do better under the new system. And of course, there will be lots of uninsured people who were not able to have coverage before who will now be able to have coverage.
Right. So it sounds like the some of the horror stories might just be overblown. Well, looking at the program as a whole, what exactly is Obamacare? Some people think it's an insurance plan in itself. What is Obamacare itself?
Well, it's a system that's been put into place to achieve a number of objectives. One of the primary objectives is to increase access to health care for people who do not currently have either basic access or good access. So one of the goals and one of the things that drives all the mechanisms within the law is to expand access to people who do not now have access. Another goal is to improve the quality of the healthcare services that we receive in this country. We are proud of our healthcare system, and we tend to think of it as the best in the world, but lots of rankings would tell us by independent sources that that's not in fact the case. And the systems of payment that have been in place for many years have sort of been emphasizing quantity rather than quality. So there are a number of modifications in the law that are emphasizing quality of care. And then the third major point I'd focus on is cost control mechanisms. We all know that the costs in our healthcare system have been seemingly out of control for a number of years. It's not at all been unusual to have double-digit increases in our insurance premiums, health insurance premiums. And not only is that true on the private market, but the cost of Medicare services and Medicaid services have been rising quite a lot as well. And this is just not a sustainable situation for private individuals or for the government. So there are a number of cost mechanisms in the law that are designed to reduce the arc of cost over the long haul.
Well, I see we have a question on Facebook from one of our listeners. Fritz Walker asks, I'd like Mark to answer this question. Why is the individual mandate that people have to buy insurance or else pay a fine necessary? Mark?
Well, insurance is bought basically in a group system. So it is always helpful in a group system to have healthy people participate in that system, because they will use less resources and they will bring the cost of care down for everybody. Part of the goal of the individual mandate is to bring more and more people into the system, into the healthcare system, into the system of who pays for care. There are lots of people these days who don't have insurance, who use healthcare and may or may not be able to pay for it, and the rest of us end up paying for that. So part of what the individual mandate does is it gives people an opportunity to contribute to their own healthcare costs by buying insurance. It's a leverage thing, to be honest. It helps expand the pool, but it also is an opportunity. It gives people an opportunity to obtain insurance who would not otherwise be able to do it. And there's been a lot of talk about the individual mandate and that it's somehow an invasion of individual rights and things like that. But if you look at Massachusetts, where they've had the individual mandate for several years, we don't see a mass exodus of people who are desperately trying to leave Massachusetts because they feel totally overwhelmed by the individual mandate. People make a choice. They make a reasoned choice. Either they're going to buy insurance, and this is a great opportunity for them to do that, or they're going to pay the penalty or the fine or whatever you want to call it. And that's a choice that they make, and they still have that choice.
Well, one criticism of the program that we hear is Obamacare, it's just a government takeover of our healthcare system. It is big, right? So is it a government takeover?
Well, in my view, it's clearly not a government takeover. The insurance that people are buying on the exchanges is still private insurance provided by private insurance companies. We could have gone to a system that was completely a government-run system, like in a number of European countries and Canada. We chose not to do that. There was even talk when the law was being formed about a public option, which would have been a plan or plans that would have been available through the government that would have competed with the private marketplace. We did not do that as a society. So although there are some provisions where the government says you have to have these benefits, other than that, it's pretty much a private market system. The government does provide the site where the private insurance companies can post their offerings, but it's still a private system. They decide what the rates are going to be. They decide what services they're going to offer beyond the essential basic ones that the government says you have to. And they price it out, and they do all the underwriting and everything else. So it's still a completely private system. And as for the essential benefits, that's been something the government has involved itself with for quite some time. From state to state, each state has different requirements as to what the essential benefits were. And so all this sort of did was pick up that concept and expand it on a national basis. And if you look at the essential benefit package, which is like 10 basic services, many of those were already required under the law of various states. Many of those were already required under the law in Pennsylvania, and many of those were required under the law in New York and some of our neighboring states. And that's not true everywhere, but it's consistent with what has always been the case, which is the government from time to time, through its elected, you know, our people, through our elected representatives, decide that there are certain essential benefits that we want to be made available to all people who purchase insurance, and this is just a continuation of that.
Okay, well, we're about to take a break. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. I'm Gloria McVeigh, your host, and we're talking to Mark Arendt about Obamacare.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Williams Center for the Performing Arts, Lafayette College, presenting saxophonist Paquito de Rivera and the New York Voices, revising their 2003 Latin jazz album Brazilian Dreams. On occasion of New York Voices' 25th anniversary, the artists have revised this collaboration with new tunes and arrangements. Wednesday, November 13th, 8 p.m. For more information, 610-330-5009 or williamscenter.lafayette.edu.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Swain School, welcoming interested families to an admission open house on Thursday, November 20th at 9 a.m. This will provide each family with an opportunity to see what an independent school can offer, challenging academics and a small class and supportive environment, preschool through eighth grade. For information, swain.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. I'm Gloria McVeigh, your host this evening, talking about Obamacare with local healthcare law attorney Mark Arendt, leader of the Lehigh Valley chapter of Organizing for Action. Mark, what were some of the things that insurance companies were doing before Obamacare that created problems for people who were trying to get access to good, affordable health care coverage?
Well, as we talked about, costs have been spiraling for quite some time. And so before the law, an insurance company could raise its premiums pretty much at will, at least, you know, as much as the market would bear, without any explanation really as to how or why they came to the conclusion that they had to raise the rates that way. Under the new law, they now have to explain themselves if they end up raising the rates more than 10%. So that's one thing that was happening. There were also revocations, and I don't know that that was as common in this part of the country as in some other parts of the country, but if you got a serious illness, it would happen sometimes that the insurance company would let you know that they were going to revoke your policy, and they would come up with some explanation as to why that was an appropriate thing to do. Perhaps you made a minor mistake on your application or something that wasn't really fundamental, but they would still use that to try to revoke your plan, and they could do it. Mm-hmm. So they won't be able to do that anymore. There were lifetime limits on how much insurance coverage you would have available to you, which, you know, to many of us doesn't seem like it would be a real problem. But when you get a serious, serious illness, a cancer or other chronic condition that you really have to fight off for a long time, your coverage can be eaten up extremely quickly. And so lifetime limits became a problem for lots of people, and that's not going to be a problem anymore. You also, and of course many people know this, could be denied coverage due to pre-existing conditions, or you could be charged higher premiums for pre-existing conditions. And that was a difficult situation for many people. They would perhaps they'd have insurance through a job, but then they'd leave that job, and then they'd have to go out and find their insurance, and it was hard to get it. Or if they found it, maybe the coverage wasn't very good, or they had to pay a heck of a lot for it. And now, starting in January, you won't be able to be denied because of any pre-existing condition. And that can affect, I mean, I've seen estimates that that's over 100 million people in our country that have pre-existing conditions, depending on how you define it. So that impacts upon a lot of people, and is a very meaningful change for many, many people.
And I guess I've read that the lifetime limits issue is why so many personal bankruptcies were caused by these mounting medical bills.
Well, I think that was a contributing factor, certainly. I have a little stat here which says that in 2007, 2/3 of personal bankruptcies were due to medical bills.
Wow.
And this is not just, you know, theoretical things that we talk about sometimes. That's the way it feels, but that's really not what it is. This is real life. This is real life for real people. And we need to find ways to make it possible for them to get medical care without going into bankruptcy.
For sure. And these benefits that you were describing, the limit on how much a company can increase your premiums before they have to ask for permission, the lifetime limits being lifted, and the pre-existing conditions being eliminated. Do these things only apply if I buy health insurance sometime during this period of Obamacare plans? In other words, if I'm one of the people that doesn't buy insurance through Obamacare, do I get these protections or don't I?
These protections are available under any new insurance plans in the marketplace at this point in time.
Okay. So,
but let me correct one thing. It's not that you can't, the if it's more than a double-digit increase in premium, you have to explain it. It's not, unless the state has a particular law that says that the insurance company has to get permission to do that, and some states do, it's not sort of a permission thing. It's an explanation thing.
Got it. So it's up to the state.
So if you're a consumer, if you're somebody who has insurance with X company, and X company tells you that they're going to raise your rates by 15%, X company has to put on its website an explanation as to how it came to the conclusion that it was going to raise your rates by 15%, and then you can go look at that and evaluate whether that makes sense to you.
I see. That makes sense. Now, you said one of the goals of the, of creating the Obamacare program was increasing access to healthcare. How does Obamacare address access issues?
Okay, so the goal of access is to expand the number of people who are covered by insurance. And so some of the things that we've already talked about contribute to that. So the whole business with pre-existing conditions, so if you can't deny people coverage for pre-existing conditions, obviously the people who you were going to deny can now have access to insurance and to healthcare insurance. So that's one way of expanding access. Many of you have heard of the young adults who are now able to stay on their family's insurance plan until they're age 26. That's a way to get coverage to younger adults who often don't have insurance. Medicaid expansion, and I think we'll probably talk about this later, but Medicaid is the program for poorer folk who don't have the ability to purchase their own insurance. Under the law, that was expected to be expanded to include more people so that they would have access to insurance. There's something called a small employer tax credit, which is an incentive to small employers, i.e. employers of under 25 people, I think it is, or 50, I'm not sure, but who have the ability to take advantage of this tax credit that gives them a credit for their expenses, so part of their expenses that they incur in obtaining insurance for their employees. So that's going to help small employers who sometimes struggle to purchase insurance get insurance because their cost is going to go down. There's also, and this is talked about a fair amount in the news sometimes, but there's a mandate on larger employers, as in employers over 50, of over 50 employees, that they are going to be required either to provide a certain level of insurance or they're going to be required to pay a penalty. And that's, again, not intended to punish anyone. It's intended to expand the number of people who are covered. And then another aspect, of course, is the subsidies. Under the way the law is written, lots of individuals who go to seek insurance who are now uninsured will qualify for subsidies that will enable them to purchase insurance that they might not otherwise be able to afford because part of the cost will be covered by the subsidy. So why are we doing this whole access thing? We're doing this whole access thing because there are lots of uncovered costs. People go to the emergency room, they get care, they don't have insurance. Emergency room care is expensive, and there's no way to pay for it. And so by building in insurance for these folks, there's more money coming into the system, and those unmet costs are not passed around and foisted onto everybody else.
Makes sense to me. And about quality as one of the goals of Obamacare, as you said, we often hear, well, America has one of the best healthcare systems in the world. What are the quality issues that Obamacare addresses?
Okay, so one thing we want to do is make sure people are getting their preventive care services, because if we can spot problems early on in the treatment cycle, sometimes we can keep them from becoming bigger, more serious, more expensive problems. So one of the things that the law does is it provides access to free preventive care. And that includes 16 different kinds of services for adults, 22 different kinds of services for women, and 27 different kinds of services for children. So it's things like screenings and, you know, mammograms and evaluations and things where you can try to catch the problem before it becomes a major illness. We also, under a Medicare benefit, a lot of what we talk about has to do with private insurance, and we haven't really talked about Medicare in this whole piece yet. And Medicare is not really that much affected by the law, but there is now a new benefit under Medicare where you get a free annual wellness visit with your doctor. So it's a freebie. You don't have to pay for it. It's all yours. And then there's some other things that people don't really typically talk about, but they're out there and they're affecting the system. So physicians and hospitals are now going to be required to do some quality reporting on themselves. They're going to have to fill out some information about how they're providing the services and the quality of services that they are providing. And that's going to force them to take a harder look at what they're doing and how they're doing it and whether they're doing it well. And there are consequences to how they report, because if they're not doing well, they may not get the same level of reimbursement for their services as they would normally get. And again, this is part of the whole government system of Medicare and Medicaid. It's not really so much the private insurance, but it's the Medicare and Medicaid. Suddenly, and it seems like it should have happened a while ago, the government is thinking as a consumer. And this is good for all of us as taxpayers, that our government is thinking as a consumer.
Sure.
And they're requiring, hey, if we're going to pay for that service, we want it to be a quality service.
Right.
So we're now going to hold physicians and hospitals to certain standards of quality. And that's good for us as taxpayers, because that's going to help bring down the cost curve. Also, another area where this is coming up again in the government system of Medicare and Medicaid is hospital readmissions. The government is putting a lot of focus on, are you, once you're discharged from a hospital, do you end up back in the hospital within 30 days? And they're trying to make it so that that is not the case as much as possible. Because again, the more services are provided in a hospital, the more costly that's all going to be. So if we can build in other steps that will reduce the cost and reduce the readmission rate, that's going to be good for everyone. And better discharge plans, that's what it's going to result in. More comprehensive services, wraparound services, and that might sound expensive, but it's not as expensive as having somebody back in the hospital. And again, that's also been tied into the reimbursement rates under Medicare. So if your hospital readmission rate is not good as a hospital, you get penalized for that. And so that's going to create incentives for hospitals to get it right. And that's good for all of us.
And this is actually part of the Obamacare law.
It is.
I think a lot of people probably think that I do, that it's just a way to help people find an insurance plan they can afford. But this is looking at a much bigger problem within the healthcare system itself.
That's right. It's a much bigger perspective. And it's kind of in the healthcare field, it's people talk about it and understand it and know that their change is coming, and hospital networks are adapting to that. And when you talk to hospital people and other people in the professional field, they understand these things are happening, but it's not talked a lot about in the sort of public media. And so it's important that people understand that this is all built into the law, and it's going to have a good effect on our costs over the long haul and the quality of what we get.
And so what about people who have no health insurance now? Isn't it unfair to require them to buy it? I guess that's related to the individual mandate.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I would sort of turn that question around and say, isn't it unfair that so many people can't afford and don't have insurance? I mean, I think we're really providing people with an opportunity that many of them would be happy to have and wish that they had, to be able to buy insurance for themselves. I don't think there are a lot of people who go to bed. I mean, there are, let me rephrase that. I think there are a lot of people who go to bed who don't have insurance worrying about the fact that they don't have insurance. I remember when my wife and I were just starting out and I was going to graduate school and I was 27 or something, and we were working part-time jobs and neither of us had health insurance, and we worried about that. We worried about what could happen to one or either of us that would put us in an incredible financial bind. So I don't really think that this is a burdensome obligation. I think it's great that we're providing people an opportunity to ease some of those worries and concerns that they live with every day.
So it's really about eliminating some of the obstacles that have left so many tens of millions of people without any health coverage at all.
That's right.
And another question that comes up, I think there's still a lot of confusion about this. What if somebody already has health insurance that they're happy with?
Well, all right. So let's first talk about the government programs, Medicare and Medicaid. If you have those, if you're covered by Medicare or Medicaid, the law is not going to affect you a lot. As I said before, you get a free wellness visit now under Medicare. What we didn't talk about yet is the what is generally referred to under Medicare as the donut hole, which is there's a prescription drug benefit that covers up to a certain amount, and then there's no coverage for a certain amount, and then it kicks in again and covers after that. And what the law, the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare does is it closes that gap over time so that by 2020, I think it is, there will no longer be that gap, and there will be coverage for prescription drugs all the way through. So there's some benefits under the law for Medicare people, but otherwise they're really not going to see much change in what they do. So that's the government insurance side of things. On the private side of things, if you have an employer plan, if you're insured by your employer, there are going to be some things happening in the marketplace that may or may not affect you, but there's not a lot that's going to affect you immediately in terms of your coverage. I mean, your employer presumably is still going to keep covering you as they have. I don't really think there's going to be huge impact on the employer market, but we'll see exactly how that plays out over time. But for most people who are obtaining insurance through their employer, there's not going to be any dramatic changes as of January 1, 2014.
And that term marketplace, sometimes it's called exchange, sometimes it's called marketplace. What are we talking about with those terms?
Okay, so a marketplace, I was thinking about this today, and I was thinking, you know, it's really not unlike a farmer's market. You go to a farmer's market, a big farmer's market, and there might be 10 different vendors selling vegetables or fruits or whatever.
Sounds like the Allentown.
Yeah, it does. Sounds like the Allentown's farmer's market. So you go there, and maybe you shop around a little bit, right? You want some carrots or you want some blueberries, and you look at the different stands and see the quality of what they have. You see the price that they're offering it at, and then you make a choice. I'm going to pick, you know, Farmer A or whatever instead of Farmer D. And that's really what, it's really all this is. I mean, it's just a place where all the insurance companies are putting out their offerings. You can go look at them. You can decide. You can compare the cost. You can compare deductibles and copays and all that kind of stuff, benefits. And then you shop and you make your decision which one you want to buy. It's really very consistent with our understanding of how you purchase something. You have the resources in one place. You go and look at them. You evaluate them. And then you make your decision. And that's all this is.
Makes sense. You've been listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. I'm Gloria McVeigh, your host this evening, talking to Mark Arend about Obamacare.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem Southside, presenting Degeneration, An Exaltation of Larks. Written and performed by the Sandglass Theater, this new work is based on stories written collaboratively by Alzheimer's and late-stage dementia patients. Performed by 3 puppeteers and 5 puppets, Degeneration takes us into their complex and mysterious world, November 14th through 17th. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. I'm Gloria McVeigh, your host, talking about Obamacare with local healthcare law attorney Mark Arend, leader of the Lehigh Valley chapter of Organizing for Action. Before the break, we started talking about the term marketplace. And Mark, you're explaining what that means, that it's a lot like the Allentown Farmers Market. What about exchange? Is that something different? That's another term I hear being tossed around.
Yeah, no, that's really the same thing. They're one and the same. So all of this takes place at www.healthcare.gov. And when you go there and you enter information about yourself, it will show you the multiple plans that are available to you. And you can work through them and understand them and then make your choice, just like you would in a regular market. Frankly, there are other ways you can do that, too. You can also go, there are certain brokers who you can go to who can help you sort through all the options. Again, as I said before, there are multiple ways in. The other thing I should talk about is navigators. There are people who have been trained to help you make the decision as to what plan is good for you. And they are scattered around the country. And there are a few here in Lehigh Valley. And some of them are here, and some of them come here from Berks County, as I understand it. But when you go on the website and do some searching, there's an option for you to try to find out where those people are located. And then you can actually make an appointment and go sit and talk with someone who can help walk you through the process.
And one of those places is the Bethlehem Health Bureau, I know from my own searching experience. And I just want to remind the listeners that we are taking questions on WDIY's Facebook page. That's facebook.com/WDIY881. And at the end of the program at 7 o'clock, WDIY will be putting up the phone number for the Bethlehem Healthcare Bureau as just Bethlehem Health Bureau as one place to get started with those navigators.
Before we leave the marketplace exchange, let me just reiterate something which I think we talked about a little bit, but maybe not adequately. We did talk about December 15th as being an enrollment date if you want coverage beginning January 1st. If you don't need coverage immediately, the enrollment period will continue to March 31st. So even after January 1st, you have the opportunity to continue to shop, to continue to make your decision, and then to make your decision and join a plan. Let me just put in another piece on the subsidies, which I overlooked when we were there talking about subsidies. There was recent information from the Kaiser Foundation, which is a wonderful source of independent information on the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And they estimated that in Pennsylvania, there are probably about 1.2 plus million people who are eligible to purchase insurance through the marketplaces exchanges. And they estimated that approximately 715,000 of those folks would qualify for subsidies. So we're talking about substantially more than 50% of the people who are eligible qualifying for subsidies. So if you're worried that you may not be able to afford any of this, the best thing to do is to go on and both on the government website and on the Kaiser Foundation website, there are calculators where you can input your personal information and it can help you see what kind of subsidy you're likely to qualify for, even before you go through the formal application process.
Oh, so before you even apply, you can get a ballpark
idea. It may not be exact, but it gives you a pretty good idea.
But 715,000 people being eligible just in this state for subsidies, that's huge. That's a lot of people that may not even have thought they would be eligible for help.
Right, that's right. That's right. And people need to know that, and we need to get the word out on that.
For sure. And in terms of the enrollment period, is it once and done? If I don't get my plan by the end of March, do I lose my chance to do this?
Well, that's going to be the enrollment period for now for this cycle, but it will go around again next year, and you'll have a new opportunity. If you don't like your plan, you can always change it the next time around.
I'm not locked in.
Right.
Good. And when I go on, so when I go on to the website, can I go on more than once? Do I have to know exactly what I want before I get on?
Right.
Am I kind of in a cattle chute where once I'm in, there's no turning back?
Right. No, absolutely not. You can go in and out as many times as you want. And initially, they had it set up that you couldn't access too much information without actually opening an account. But now they have it set up so that you can actually do a little shopping in terms of the plans that might be available to you and the premiums without even opening an account. And I was checking that out this morning. Now, they do tell you that in that process that the numbers that you're going to see don't reflect the subsidies that you might be eligible for, and that you don't really find out what those are until you go through start the application process. But it still gives you a ballpark idea of what you're dealing with, and it gives you some opportunity to really shop through the plans and figure out what's available under them. When I put in my just basic information of two adults, two children, and Northampton County and Pennsylvania and all that kind of stuff, I think it was 62 plans or something popped up as being potential for me to participate in. And let's talk about that a little bit, because there are different levels of plans depending on how much you want, how much coverage you want. All of them have the essential health benefits that are part of the law, but there are different levels beyond that. So there's a top level, which is called platinum, then there's gold, then there's silver, then there's bronze, and there's also even a plan for young people under 30 that is a catastrophic plan, which is designed for people who don't really think they're going to need a lot of health insurance care, but they still want that backup in case something really bad would happen. And, of course, those are going to be the cheapest plans. So the platinum plans, you know, might cover 90% of your healthcare costs. This is just sort of a general terminology that's used. And the gold would cover 80%, and the silver would cover 70%, and the bronze would cover 60%, and then the catastrophic would probably be something less than that, but still cover your really high expense items if something really, you know, bad or tragic happened. So you have a lot of range in terms of, you know, deciding what works for you, what fits your needs, what cost you can handle, and then you make your decision.
And the idea of these categories is that each of the insurance providers, you get to see them side by side within a given category, so you're getting closer to comparing apples to apples.
That's exactly right. So you have the ability to look at all the bronze plans that might be available to you. You can kind of look at them side by side and compare them. And one of the other nuances in the law was that the descriptions are intended and required to be sort of in better, easily more understood language and more comparable to each other. It used to be that different insurance companies would use different terminology, and it made it very difficult sometimes to compare your options because they weren't even using the same words to describe the same thing. And one of the nuances under the law is that they're now supposed to be using common terminology for these plans. So it does make them easier to compare.
Well, I'm one of the people that needs to look, so that's anything they can do to make it easier, I'm happy to hear. Now, you talked about the navigators. What about the big insurance companies like Capital Blue and Highmark? They're offering to help me. Is it the same as going to a navigator if I walk into, let's say, the Capital Blue retail store at the Promenade?
Right. That's an interesting development, right, that insurance companies are now doing retail operations, which I don't think most of us have seen before. And that's because they're interested in tapping into the market that's now available to them through the people who will now be able to get insurance that couldn't get it before. So they're trying to put their best foot forward out there to get as much of that, as much of piece of that pie as they can. My understanding is that if you go to one of those stores, what they're going to talk about is the offerings that they have available to you. It's my understanding they're not going to talk about the whole range of offerings that you would find on the marketplace/exchange. So they're not going to talk about their competitors' plans. So if you really want to get the whole picture, either you go to the marketplace exchange or you go to all the individual companies that are providing offerings and find out what they have available to you. But that's a harder process, and that's one of the conveniences of the marketplace exchange, which is that it for you puts it all there in one place. You don't have to shop around to five or six different places.
And I'm not going to miss something that might be ideal for me that I might not hear about if I go into one insurance company's office, like the retail store.
If you don't go there.
If I went to Highmark, right. I might not see.
Yeah, no, you're not going to miss something that would, I mean, you know, is it possible that they would have a plan that's not also offered in the marketplace exchange? That's possible, but by and large, those are not going to be the plans that most people are going to opt for, because generally they're going to be more expensive.
So it's worth the time and effort.
Yes,
to
it's
get
worth the time
exchange.
And effort to shop. And yeah. Isn't that really consistent with how we live in our society, right?
For sure.
We expect people to be intelligent consumers. It's part of our culture. It's part of our DNA. So why shouldn't we do that for our health insurance?
And when I'm shopping, if I'm looking at the same or similar plans that are laid out, let's say at the bronze level, the easiest route might be to say, okay, well, these all sound good. I'm just going to go with the cheapest premium. What's wrong with that approach?
Well, that if that's what you want to do, you as the consumer can do that. But if you look at them a little more carefully, you may find that there are reasons why you would pick a different one that may not be the cheapest, because maybe it has, you know, lower deductibles or whatever, lower copays or this, that, or the other thing,
right,
that make it something.
So out-of-pocket costs.
Might decide, I think I like that bronze plan better, even though it's not the cheapest because of X, Y, and Z. So you won't know that unless you evaluate them.
So just looking at the premium, you don't get the whole picture.
No,
even
you
if
won't.
Cost
no,
is an important factor
no, because
for you.
You always need to think of both cost and benefits. And that's, you know, even for, we talked about earlier that some people may, as their private insurance plans are terminated and they have to move into the marketplace exchange, that sometimes they may actually be paying more. But you also have to think about what benefits you're getting for what you're paying. And sometimes, you know, you decide to pay more because you like the better quality of what you're getting. I mean, we don't always, as consumers, pick the lowest priced item. Sometimes we say, yeah, I might have to spend $50 more for that, but it's worth it because I'm getting more. So that's part of how we have to think about these health insurance options that are now available to us.
And in the past, dealing with insurance companies, my experience has been that to get a cheaper premium, you may end up with a really high deductible or a really high copay. And, you know, this is something that most of us don't think about every day. So it helps me to think about what are these other issues.
Right,
that,
right. And part of what you're going to have to do if you want to get the best bang for your buck in this process, just like you do in any other buying situation, is you're going to have to think about the terminology and understand what the options are and understand deductibles and copays and all those things.
And if I get stuck, I'm going to come and ask you, Mark.
just like when you buy a car, you think about the things that relate
true.
To a car.
Right.
And you educate yourself. You know, people buy consumer reports and think about what's the best quality and all that kind of stuff. So it's a process. You educate yourself and then you go make your decision.
And help is out there if you feel
yes,
you need it.
Yes, help is out there if you feel that you need it.
And what about the government subsidies? I've never applied for anything like that before, but if it's available, I'm certainly going to take advantage of it. But I guess what I'm having to wrap my brain around is the idea that with this program, subsidies aren't just for the poorest of the poor. That a lot of people who may go into the exchange may be pleasantly surprised to find that their household income, number of people in their household, qualifies them for a subsidy. And I understand it's the income for 2014. You give them your, that's what I found out the hard way. But So people shouldn't be hesitant, or they might miss an important piece of.
That's right. That's right.
What
and
this
the caps for the subsidies in terms of how much income you can have before you don't qualify for a cap. I probably didn't say that. I mean, a subsidy is depends on how many people in your household. So, you know, if you have four people in your household, you can have a subsidy even if you have up to $90,000+ of income. If you have five people, it goes higher. If you have six people, it goes higher. So, yes, there are lots of people who qualify for subsidies who don't really realize that they would. And they need to go check it out. And if they do, I think they're going to be pleasantly surprised about that. And there's no shame in it, right? I mean, there's no baggage associated with that. I mean, we as a society have decided that it's to society's benefit for many people to have insurance, for most people to have insurance. So the system has been built to make that happen, and the subsidies are part of that. So there's no shame in taking advantage of that, any more than there's shame in taking advantage of the, you know, mortgage payment or the, you know, interest tax credit or any of that kind of stuff.
Right,
because
right,
it's
right.
All the same thing. We've right. decided as a society this is good for our society, so it's been being made available to you.
Makes sense, and a lot of people do certainly take advantage of that tax credit. And Medicare and Medicaid, you talked about Medicare. So someone who's on Medicare, they don't really need to.
No, that's right.
They don't need to
worry about the exchange at all. It doesn't apply to them. Basic Medicare is still basic Medicare. Medicare Advantage plans are still Medicare Advantage plans. Their system pretty much stays the way it is.
Because suddenly, in the middle of all this discussion about Obamacare, it's open enrollment time for Medicare.
Right. And that's just a whole separate system, two different systems.
Got it. And how does Medicaid fit into all this? You mentioned it earlier, but our governor here in Pennsylvania seems to be engaged in a protracted battle with Washington over expansion of Medicaid, which is a key part of the way the Affordable Care Act was written. What's going on with that now?
So as I said, one of the key parts of access was to expand Medicaid to more and more people. The Supreme Court decided that it would be up to each state to decide whether they wanted to participate in that expansion or not. Pennsylvania decided so far not to participate. I'm hopeful that that will still change. As a result of that, hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians who would have otherwise qualified for Medicaid do not currently qualify for Medicaid. And they're going to have trouble working into the rest of the system, the exchanges or any of that kind of stuff, because the system was not designed to take those people in because it was expected they would be covered by Medicaid. So they may have trouble being eligible for subsidies and things like that, even though they're in the lower income levels than people who will qualify for subsidies because the law assumed that they were going to get Medicaid. So that's a problem for that community, and that's not a good thing. And
a lot of those are the working poor.
Yes, absolutely. And just about any study that's been done, whether in Pennsylvania or any other state in the country that has not expanded Medicaid, has shown the economic benefits of expanding Medicaid far outweigh the economic detriment to doing so. Because with the money flowing in, there's more jobs, there's more healthcare costs being paid. People have a little more ability to pay, you know, buy other things because their healthcare costs are going to be addressed. And so, and the other thing about it is that under the law, the federal government committed to funding 100% of the additional cost for 3 years and then 90% after that. So there's not a huge new financial burden being placed on the states under this program. So I'm hopeful that over time, even those states that have not yet adopted the expansion will do so.
Well, Mark, I see that we're almost at the end of the program, and I want to thank you. Lots of good stuff tonight. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I think when people prepare to go shopping for insurance on the system, they should do what they typically do, get their information together. You know, who's in the family, who's going to be subject to the coverage, what kind of income do they have, what kind of coverage are they looking for. Educate yourselves on the types of coverage that are available, budget, figure out what your budget's going to be, just like you would when you shop for anything else. And I guess the final thing I'd say is, as I tried to talk about today, there are lots of hidden wonderful things in this law that are going to be good for society as a whole that have nothing to do with the marketplace, but have something to do with reducing costs and providing access and providing additional better quality for all of us.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Mark. And once again, to find out more about the Lehigh Valley Chapter of Organizing for Action, you can go to facebook.com/organizingforaction, Lehigh Valley PA, or to Twitter at OFA_LV_PA. And if any of our listeners would like to get involved in helping people understand the Obamacare program, OFALV will have an informational program for volunteers at Northampton Community College on Saturday, November 16th, in room 190 of the College Center. This has been Gloria McVeigh, your host this evening, and this entire program will be posted on WDIY's website by the end of the day tomorrow, Friday. Thank you for listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.
This is WDIY Allentown.